Hi everyone. Welcome to another episode of the AICPA Personal Financial Planning Podcast. I'm Andrea Miller, and here we are in our third year of delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment, client service, and practice management topics. Be sure to visit us at AICPA.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm Mackie McNeil. I'm here to talk about the new approach to retirement planning. Thanks for having me on today. And I'm excited to share with you the process that we use at the Prosperity People. And we're going to talk this through in six sessions. Session one is our session today. You are in the people business. Session two will be setting the stage. Three, how to gamify your process. Session four will be when and how to talk about investments. Session five will be what happens in a quarterly and semi-annual review meeting. And session six will be the voice of the client. Like, what do clients think about the way we do planning? So let's start today with talking about you're in the people business. So we're going to explore six key ideas. The first one is, at its heart, financial planning is a people business. So once I'd found that out, that brings me to key idea number two. Once I had decided I wasn't in the numbers business, I was in the people business, what next? Third idea we're going to explore today, data is unbiased and people are not. Our fourth idea, get comfortable with feelings. Our fifth idea, couples are two people. And six, making planting interactive. So one, at its heart, financial planning is a people business. I learned how to do financial planning from some of the pioneers in our industry. These were CPAs who were doing planning early on in their careers. And I didn't know how to get involved with this whole industry. So I looked to them for their guidance. I actually studied with them. They had a study group, and I would go to weekend sessions and learn their processes. And when I boiled down their planning method, it really was a lot like a tax return. Clients would fill out forms, we would clarify and really focus on the information and the data. We would ask some clarifying questions about the data, and we would prepare the plan. Of course, we talked about goals, but it was always from the standpoint of what they cost. Again, going back to the data. So once we got all the data, I would go in the back room, or eventually I had other planners who did that, and they would put all this information in, and we would develop a plan for the client. So at the beginning, that's the method I adopted, and I worked really hard. I would work on these plans and stew over them and make sure I had everything in there that the client wanted. I would be so excited that when I got it done, and I was convinced the client would be just as excited. But when I sat down with them to go over their plan, that was not what happened. It was a lot like going over an income tax return. And you know, most clients don't want to spend a lot of time on your income tax return. So, you know, it was really not very different. I would review the data and I would smile and be so excited. And I told the client how happy they would be with our work. But after dozens of these plans, I came to see that the clients weren't nearly as excited to review their plans as I was. They found all these numbers really tiring. I found them exhilarating, but to the client, they were just overwhelming amounts of data. They wanted their life to work, but they didn't want me to beat them to death with the numbers. And a second unexpected result began to happen to me. I noticed that clients didn't always implement their plans. I couldn't believe it. It's like, why would they come and pay me to do a financial plan and then not follow it? Something must be wrong. So I called the CPAs who had taught me their process, and all but one had quit doing financial planning. They said they found it to be ineffective, and they had moved to simply managing assets. They were simply managing assets for clients. And that just wasn't going to work for me. You know, I firmly believed that financial planning was really important. I had drank the Kool-Aid and comprehensive planning was the way to help a client live a better life and be more effective. And I wanted it to work like that. But I saw that what I was doing wasn't working. What I saw was that we at the Prosperity People spent a lot of time inputting data, running scenarios, going back and forth, making the client's work, life work from our perspective. We did it, of course, from what we thought they wanted, but it was still our hard work to get all this to work. We were really deeply entrenched with the process. But as a result, the client wasn't. They had spent a lot of time gathering data, but they hadn't spent any time thinking about, well, if I can't have this, maybe I can have this, and how do I put enough of this in? And also from their perspective, it kind of looked like magic. We would give them, they would give us data, and we would give them, like, here's what you can do. And of course, the worst case was we were boring them to death with all this information. So there was an undeniable truth here. I was in the people business, not the data business. And I had to turn the process upside down and inside out to be about people, not about the data. So to live my values, I had to create a planning process that really worked. I needed to learn a lot that I didn't know about what made people tick. So what was next? Our second discussion item today. Of course, I knew a lot about numbers, data, return, investments, long-term care. I had spent years studying all that, all the things I needed to do to be a PFS. But I had little training about people and psychology. What came into clear view for me was that my primary goal was to help a person. And to do that, I needed to know more about people, what makes them tick. So I found my path of how do I understand more about people, studying an ancient teaching of personality, the Enneagram. And I'm going to spell that because many of you may not have heard that word. It's Enneagram. At its core, the Enneagram teaches us about 9 personality types using the 3 centers of intelligence, your head, your heart, and your body. So there are 3 head types, 3 heart types, and 3 body types. In fact, I got so entrenched in this study, I spent 3 years on this course of study, increasing my understanding of people, personalities, and from a very experiential way. I learned from teachers, in other words, people in this program, people would give us lectures on the types, but also they had people of different types come in and they would interview them so you could hear people talk about their personality or their type from their perspective. They were just ordinary people, you know, again, not like me, not data people, just people that had their own lives. And of course, the third piece of this was an extensive meditation practice. So the teaching became one of learning information, reading data, reading books about the Enneagram, hearing people speak about the Enneagram, and then meditation so I could understand myself more. I found this so effective that I became a certified teacher, and it really has become invaluable to me. One, it gave me insights into how other people see the world so that I could be more deeper and inclusive in the way that I worked with them. And I found that the Enneagram was really more comprehensive, or I don't know if comprehensive is what it made more sense to me than any other system I explored. And I looked at Myers-Briggs and DISC and things like that, but the Enneagram really just spoke to me and really helped me also discover my own biases. Because as a planner, we all show up with our own biases. We show up with our own challenges. And if we're not careful, if we don't understand our own biases, we can put them on a client. So this really kept me from projecting onto the client. And because I could now see my own type and my own ways of being more clearly, so I could be more present to who they were. At the same time, I trained my team as I went along. And then it's become an annual process. We deepen our experience together of the Enneagram each year. So we speak to each other about Enneagram types. We help ourselves understand clients better using their Enneagram type and so forth. And we invite all of our clients to use the Enneagram if they so choose. Some do and some don't. So as I learned more about the Enneagram, I tweaked our planning process. As I learned more about people, I would try different things in the way that we worked with them. If they worked, I'd keep doing them, and if not, I'd do something different. So at the time I studied the Enneagram, which was 20 years ago, it was sort of a fringe system. Not many people had heard of it. It was mostly used in religious circles. But today, you can find it in business environments everywhere. My favorite website is theenneagramworldwide.com. If you Google the Enneagram, I'm sure you can find a local teacher in your area. The third idea I want to explore is that data is unbiased, but people are not. With my understanding of the Enneagram, I got another missing piece of the puzzle. We each see the world through our own biases, and most of those biases or frames of reference come from our childhood. If we watched our parents, aunts and uncles, and others deal with money, we took on their beliefs, or we rebelled against them, or something in between. You have to remember, too, that your adult influencers got their training from their parents. So a lot of the ways that we learned to be about money was handed down from generation to generation. So what people came to learn or believe about money, finance, and wealth was maybe not as much about truth as about fantasy. You know, other people were there to see me because they didn't have a degree in finance and accounting or a PFS. And they knew what they knew from their own perspective and their own family experiences. So I began to call those money fantasies. It's like, well, I ran into a lot of them over the years. Some of my most common ones I see are the belief that debt is bad, or I will save money after I pay off my debt, or my home is an investment. People who have this fantasy often will say to me, it's okay, I'm spending money on my home, and I'll get it back. Buying stocks is too risky. Only invest in U.S. companies. Don't worry, I'll make a lot of money in the future. I don't need to save right now. Or I'll never save enough, so why try? Or shopping is fun, and I don't want to deprive myself. Or wait, this is one of my favorites. I'll retire on Social Security. And of course, I'm sure you've seen these too. So I found this topic of money fantasy so critical that I devoted 3 chapters of my book, The Intersection of Joy and Money, to it, to explore what were the ways that people saw money that were really counterproductive to them achieving their goals in life. And so as I began to realize that people had all these ways of being with money, these beliefs that were fairly rigid and really hardened in their way of being, I saw that I had 2 paths. One, I could ask each client to identify and dismantle their own fantasies one by one. Or 2, I could build a process that really highlighted the true consequences of their beliefs. And maybe then they would make a better choice. So path 1 was going to be all but impossible. Clients often clung to their money fantasies like a child with a warm blanket. If I was going to go this route, I'd have to find a way to do it without making someone wrong, otherwise they'd get defensive. Plus, this path was going to take a long time. Path 2 was more efficient and more effective, but it meant that I had to design our way of working with clients so that people saw their money fantasies for themselves and what it was costing them in terms of their wealth, their cash flow, their stress, and how it was blocking their path to prosperity. And this was how I came up with the idea that planning had to be interactive. I had to quit doing the plan for the client. The client had to be in the room while the planning occurred. And I made this decision, as I said, almost 20 years ago, long before financial planning software allowed, but we really just modified our process so that we would work with the software in this interactive way. And I'll talk more about that as we move along. So number 4 that I want to talk about was getting comfortable with feelings. I've met a lot of CPAs over the years, but I've felt few that really enjoyed embracing their feelings. And I think, you know, one of the things that we have to realize, again, if we're in the people business, is that feelings are human. All human beings have feelings. And in virtually every first client meeting that I have participated in, I have one standard line that I always talk about, and that is money can bring up big feelings. And your feelings are not only welcome here, they are invited here. What I would invite you to think about is, if you don't invite feelings into the conversation, your clients will still have them. And they will create conflict with the couple, conflict with you, and challenges for your clients in implementing their plans. But if you invite them, if you invite them to bring their feelings into the meeting with you, and you have to get comfortable with your own, but you have to get comfortable with letting somebody else have theirs. Just letting somebody cry, letting them express their anger or frustration. You know, human beings are messy. Being human is difficult. And if you're going to really help a human being, you've just got to accept this messiness and this humanness. So in addition to understanding more about people, I found also that listening training, the Enneagram training was critical, but I also had to learn to listen. That listening training was a super essential thing. And I didn't have any listening training growing up. I had never had any training on listening, but I learned how to listen. I don't know how many listening trainings I've taken at this point in my life. Many. So I listen for meaning, I listen for feelings, and I listen for context. It all matters because you're dealing with someone's life, not just their head, not just their intellect, but their heart, their goals, their dreams, their family, their legacy. That's all emotional stuff. The fifth thing I want to talk about in this podcast is couples are two people. I can't tell you how many male planners I've had ask me just one question. How do you get the wives to come to the financial planning meeting or the investment review meeting? And the first time it happened, I was really thunderstruck with this question. I said, I don't really understand. This person is your client, right? So they would say yes, but the husband always comes in and talks to me. And I said, well, I just won't even get started without the wife. Now, it could be the reverse. The wife could be driving it, but I never had anybody ask me the question from that perspective. So that would be, you know, there are two people in a couple, two separate people. And it is our role at the Prosperity People that we never start a plan and ever. And the entire planning process is always done with both people in the room. Of course, that room is often a Zoom room these days, but two people in the room. So inevitably, one of the pair is much more interested in planning, but both of them are interested in their life. So from the very first meeting with both spouses present, we start talking about their life and about our process. My advice would be don't get started until both of your clients are in the room. The sixth thing I want to talk about before we close this out is making planning interactive. As I began to add up all the things I knew about clients, that my Enneagram training, listening training, emotional intelligence, I came to this clear decision that financial planning had to be done interactively with the client in the room. So as I said, long before there was any kind of software designed for this, the Prosperity People, we were doing it this way. And in the next few sessions, I'm going to describe in detail how do we do planning with the client in the room. And then how do we set the frame for that? Because it's not just one thing, it's a process. So it's a process of setting expectations, delivering on those expectations, and bringing it all together in a very interactive way. So the only thing that we ever do without the client in the room is put some basic data in. And again, we'll talk about that as we move along. So I hope you've enjoyed this session on We're in the People Business. The next session we'll be talking about is setting the stage, how to have the first meeting. So on behalf of the PFP section, this has been Mackie McNeil. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website to find the Advisor's Guide to Practical Retirement Planning. Stay tuned for Andrea Miller, who will tell you how to find this valuable resource. And thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Our hope is that you found a valuable takeaway that helps you help your clients. Check out the show notes to find resources related to this episode. We are living through unprecedented times, and we want to know what you need most to support your clients and your business. Feel free to send an email to financialplanning@aicpa.org with topic ideas. The AICPA PFP section is the home for professional financial planners, designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your practice to the next level. To find more valuable resources, visit us at aicpa.org/PFP. If you'd like to know more about the CPA-exclusive financial planning credential, go to aicpa.org/PFS. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.